On Wednesday, December 6th, the President of the United States formally recognized Jerusalem as the capital city of Israel, breaking with more than 60 years of official U.S. policy. Why did this happen? What does it mean? And what might happen next? To respond to the urgency of this moment, Unsettled is trying something new, a mini-series. We're bringing you short episodes featuring experts and activists, each with a different perspective on the new status of Jerusalem. For this episode, I spoke to Rabbi Stephen Wernick, CEO of the United Synagogue of Conservative Judaism, which serves and represents conservative congregations across North America. On December 8th, USCJ put out a statement applauding the United States' recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of the State of Israel. Rabbi Wernick was also the rabbi at my synagogue growing up in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
In a couple sentences, would you mind letting us know, just giving us an overview about why the conservative movement decided to support, to applaud this decision?
Well, what the conservative movement is applauding is the official recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And I don't think anybody really disputes that, right? Jerusalem's been the capital of Israel since 1948 for 70 years, and certainly been the capital of the Jewish people in their hearts for thousands of years. As the formal recognition that President Trump issued stated, the issues of boundaries and borders and a commitment to the two-state solution are things that that need to be negotiated between the parties. So that's why our statement, both welcomed and applauded the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and also, wondered, why now? What do you do next?
What I want to know is, for those Palestinians, for average Palestinians, not their leadership, but average Palestinians who don't hold any power, who aren't privy to decision making, what about those Palestinians who lay claims to Jerusalem?
There's no doubt that this is a very complex circumstance. Even the Palestinian Authority recognizes that in agreeing to a two-state solution and entering into negotiations with Israel, that Jerusalem has to be, addressed, and that Jerusalem in some way, shape, or form is going to be shared. The way to do that, is really, really tricky. But there's, I think there are already significant contours of what that's going to look like, right? It's certainly going to look like West Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. I think Israel is in some way, shape, or form going to contain the majority of sovereignty of the old city and the holy areas, but find some formula for sharing that in some way, shape, or form. And then Abu Dis, the Palestinians have, already built a parliament in Abu Dis, which is, it's empty, but it's there. So, it's like, a thinking person who's been watching this for 25, 30 years, you already see the contours of that. So for the Palestinians, I understand that this is certainly a blow from their perspective. But at the same time, there's no country in the world that doesn't have the right to declare its capital. For Israel, the parliament, the Knesset, is in Jerusalem. All the apparatus of government is in Jerusalem. The fact that the U.S. is declaring this is a long time coming, and certainly for the Jewish people should be welcome. The fact that it's also disconnected from any context that gives us a sense that there's a strategy for moving the parties forward is disconcerting, and our statement sought to be balanced in both of those items.
Why is it necessary for the United States? Why do we need the United States recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital? If this is something that's functionally happening, if this is something that's already, if this is something that's already true on the ground, when so many experts are saying that this will actually further the peace process from happening. Is this something that was beneficial at this time? And if not, why applaud that decision?
Well, again, I mean, like, you know, we wonder about the timing for specifically that purpose, but I'm not going to be one who's going to not welcome a formal recognition, certainly of the United States as the world's only superpower, of the legitimacy of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. You know, so that's, you know, I think the, you know, Alana, it's like, yeah, I've answered this question.
Okay, no, that's
you know, the recognition is important as a you know, element of statecraft, and the question about the timing and the context and how that may or may not move the peace process forward is one that reasonable people can debate. It's not my place to debate that. I'm a religious leader, you know, so our goal is to look at these things from a values perspective, and to comment on them from our values. And the Masorti conservative Jewish movement is a centrist movement, religiously, and I think most of our people are probably centrist politically as well. So we understand the nuance and the tension that exists with this, and our statement sought to express that.
No, I find it interesting. You're talking about your role as a religious leader, talking about values and Jewish values. And I know I was reading on the USCJ website. You know, you talk about your unique challenge of navigating a quote radically inclusive society in an authentic and dynamic Jewish way. Right now, Jews and Palestinian residents of Jerusalem, they live quite differently, you know, with Palestinians receiving a reduced municipal investment services from trash collection to education and the like. So I'm wondering if you have a vision for a future Jerusalem that honors the rights of both Jews and Palestinian residents in an inclusive way.
I think that any municipal government has a responsibility to honor all of its citizens. In an inclusive way. That's my vision in Jerusalem as it would be anywhere. You know, Jerusalem has specific challenges that are related to national identities and to political calculations. That makes it hard. But from a vision perspective and from a values perspective, every citizen should be valued. And should be supported by his municipal government, no matter where it lives, no matter where the person lives. In Jerusalem, it's much more complicated. You have Palestinians who predominantly live in Arab East Jerusalem, and though they have the access of citizens, they have not formally adopted citizenship, and much of that is to keep the political calculus open for exactly this reason. And there are Israeli political leaders, unfortunately, who take advantage of that. And that's not proper either. Complex problems need complex solutions. There's no simple solution for this.
Right. I want to shift a bit. Before you were speaking about your role as a religious leader, I think you'd agree with me that you have another role as representative of the Jewish people, conservative Jews anyway. So, you know, I wanted to name some statistics about how you know, American Jews feel about this issue. So, according to a recent AJC survey in September of 2017, says that only 16% of Jews favor moving the embassy to Jerusalem immediately, 36% favor moving the embassy to Jerusalem at a later date in conjunction with progress in Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, and 44% favor not moving the embassy at all. How can you explain USCJ's statement applauding this announcement with respect to those statistics?
In the following ways. One is you have to break those statistics down by denomination, and there are differences in denominational perspectives as it relates to that. Those statistics look at the whole of the Jewish community.
I think conservative Jews make up about 18%. Is that correct?
18% of the overall population, but 56% of conservative Jews have been to Israel at least once in their lifetime. According to AIPAC, 50% of the Jews that attend the AIPAC policy conference come from the conservative movement. I don't know if J Street keeps track of that, but I know that in terms of J Street U, There's a very high percentage of people who grew up in conservative Judaism who are also in J Street. So the conservative movement is a centrist movement. And what we're concerned about is that people are engaged with Israel and not necessarily dictating what that engagement should be. So I think that, you know, whenever you look at general statistics, there are marked differences, especially when it comes to Israel, when you break it down by denominational identities. With that being said, USCJ is a conservative Jewish organization, and so we strive to speak with the voice of the values of conservative Jewry as we understand that. In this particular case, I think we probably hit it right because we've got everybody upset with us about the statement. when nobody's happy, then you hit the right. When nobody's happy, you know you did the right thing, especially if you're a centrist. Because if you're a centrist, the job is to disturb the comfortable and comfort the disturbed. So I think we've successfully done that in this case. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that your question is about the movement of the embassy, and though the president announced starting a process, I'll believe it when I see it. Right? Mm-hmm. If the president really wanted to move the embassy, he could very easily have moved the emblem of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem in a day, and not even in a day, in a couple of hours. Right? So that hasn't happened. So I don't think we should, get all up in arms about something that hasn't happened yet. Sometimes political statements are more of a dance than they are about actual policy moves. With this president in particular, that seems to be the case.
I guess what I want to ask is, considering moving the embassy and formally recognizing Jerusalem as the capital city of Israel, they're all somewhat symbolic moves, but what experts are saying is that this signifies to Palestinians that their national aspirations are not respected. They're not taken seriously. And so I guess a question that I have for you is, if that's true, that runs counter to your statement that supports a two-state solution. What would you say to that?
My response to that, Alana, is not necessarily my own political views.
Okay.
Nor necessarily the views of USCJ, right? But I'm going to answer the question that you've asked best as I can.
Okay.
Right? I think there is also an argument that can be made that the Palestinians for well too long have taken a strategy of not speaking directly with Israel and going instead to try to go to the international court, to the UN, to the UN Human Rights Organization, and every place except for the table with Israel, including, in fact, when President Obama pressured Israel to free settlements, and Prime Minister Netanyahu did that, and it wasn't until the last month of that freeze to expire that suddenly the Abbas is talking about coming to the table, and by then it was too late. So I think that this is a really complicated situation, and there's a lot of information that people don't always fully appreciate the totality of it. And we're far too quick to draw conclusions from particular acts. I don't think that recognition of Jerusalem is symbolic. I think recognition of Jerusalem is significant, certainly from the United States. And then followed by the Czech Republic, and it'll be interesting to see what other countries recognize it too. I think that the Palestinians have a right to be legitimately concerned by that. But at the same time, I would never argue that Jerusalem is not the capital of the state of Israel and has not been the capital of the state of Israel. And so that's just part of the complexity here. Does Israel need to do more to create a context by which it can advance peace? Yes, absolutely. Do the Palestinians need to do more? Yes, absolutely. And if you're an Israeli and you're living in the Middle East and you're watching a failed state in Syria and Lebanon, a teetering state in Jordan, a failed state in Iraq, Afghanistan, the increase of Iran in terms of its regional influence, the Sinai in disarray, Egyptian change of state in the last decade. You know, you're concerned about at least at this moment about the potential of another failed state in the West Bank and Gaza. So I mean, this is really, really hard. Now I'll get back to speaking personally. I want to see the United States move the process forward and work with the parties to create that context. You know, I think that's essential. I think both sides have a lot of work that they need to do. You know, and I like to see that work happen. But I don't think any of us should be so naive to think that it's easy. It is not easy. This is one of the most complex problems in the world.
Of course. Now, now that you've gone back to your personal opinion, I will redirect you to the USCJ's official statement. So I want to read from the statement. It says, USCJ reaffirms its belief that this two-state formula is the most viable pathway to peace, granting Israel security and the Palestinians their national aspirations. So I'm wondering, is the USCJ doing anything to support the two-state formula?
Well, we're, that's not our mission, right? You know, I mean,
that's
right. Well, look, from the statement, you know, that's a value, right? We can express the value. Our mission is not to be involved in geopolitics in that regard, right? But we can express a value that we hope that the people that identify with us and people that are listening, you know, might take to heart in terms of how they engage with these issues. Right, and in our statement in particular, we were also reflecting the statement of the president. So we were reinforcing and emphasizing something that the president said when he recognized Jerusalem, and we wanted to keep that out there, that we believe that that is the best solution for both sides. But it's not our job to be involved in that negotiation or to particularly move, you know, in that direction. What we want is we want Jews and everybody else to be informed, to be engaged, and to address the policy issues from the perspective of that value. And if we can succeed in that, we'll be happy.
Unsettled is produced by Emily Bell, Asaf Calderon, Yoshi Fields, Max Friedman, and me. This episode was edited by Max Friedman. Original music by Nat Rosenzweig. Get more information and listen to previous episodes at our website, unsettledpod.com. Don't forget to follow Unsettled on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And most importantly, subscribe wherever you get your podcast to make sure you never miss an episode of Unsettled.